WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A 17-year-old student at Magruder High School in Rockville is arrested yesterday after police say he shot a classmate. Around 1 yesterday afternoon, security guards at Magruder found a male student in a bathroom. He'd been shot. The school went into lockdown a few minutes later. Then at 3, Montgomery County Police Chief Marcus Jones says officers found the suspect, another student, inside the school and arrested him.
We don't know exactly what was this about. We're still in the midst of the investigation, actually finding out what caused this incident to occur.
He says the shooting happened inside the school, but they're not exactly sure where. The victim was taken to the hospital in serious condition. One New York City police officer is dead and another critically wounded in a shooting in Harlem last night. It happened when they were responding to a call about an argument between a woman and her adult son. The suspect was shot and is hospitalized in critical condition. Comments a mom in Luray, Virginia made at a school board meeting on Thursday lead to criminal charges. Amelia King has been charged with an oral threat while on school property after saying she would, quote, bring every single gun loaded and ready, unquote, if the board didn't ditch the school's mask mandate. She told the board it should respect the wishes of parents. Page County Public Schools issued a statement saying King made comments that were perceived by many to be threatening. She's been released in a $5,000 unsecured bond. Some kids in a major school district in New Jersey likely aren't spending this Saturday doing what they want to be doing.
The Paterson School District in New Jersey is making up for lost instruction today from a missed school day due to a storm in late October. But the students will be logging in from home. The decision to have school Saturday was made just before the district went back to remote learning through Monday, January 24th, due to rising COVID cases. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
If you're driving through Arlington County, you may soon want to slow down. Today, the Arlington County Board of Supervisors is expected to vote in favor of putting 10 portable speed cameras in some school zones to get people to slow down.
It helps us reach our goals of Vision Zero, which is no traffic injuries or deaths.
Supervisor Libby Garvey says if you go more than 10 miles an hour over the speed limit, you would get a $50 ticket. Some critics say it's a money grab. She says that sounds like some speeders just want to be able to go fast without facing any consequences. Volunteers are gathering at Arlington National Cemetery today to take down tens of thousands of holiday wreaths.
We placed 257,000 wreaths back in December with 38,000 volunteers to remember our veterans. Now it's time to clean it up.
Dan Mead, Director of Operations for the Arlington Wreaths Project, says a yearly cleanup effort doesn't draw as many volunteers, but is still a vital part of honoring fallen veterans. The wreaths are taken to Covanta, a company that burns waste as green energy. Each year, Wreaths Across America remembers the fallen in national cemeteries around the country. Rachel Sutherland on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the Wizards fell to the Raptors 109-105. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Arlington, Virginia, North Courthouse Road, that is shut down because of a water main break between 13th Street and 14th Street. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, no delays are being reported on either loops. You'll be at the posted speed limit. On 66 eastbound in Vienna, there is a crash. Three right lanes are blocked approaching Nutley Street. Traffic is slow from 123. And finally, on 95 in Virginia, between the D.C. Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're going to be at the posted speed limit. No delays on the northbound side and on the southbound side. From GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, sunny, highs in the lower 30s. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the lower 20s. And tomorrow, becoming cloudy, high temps in the 30s. Right now, 18 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday morning update.
Hour two of the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us each week. White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax and Newsmax TV. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
You have seen many a presidential press conference. You saw one this week, a two-hour one with Joe Biden. Put it in perspective for us, John. There was a big contrast between the reports from conservative media outlets and those more favorable to the president, to the progressive left.
All right. First, let's put it really in perspective. This was the 10th news conference that Joe Biden has held since becoming president 1 year and 2 days ago. Now, contrast that to Barack Obama, who held 27 news conferences at this point, and Donald Trump, who held 22. In addition, if one wants to factor in the interviews that he's given, that number is 22 compared to 92 by Donald Trump, including hostile media that he would say is hostile media, including the New York Times and the Financial Times, and at this point, 59 interviews held by Ronald Reagan, whose time was being extremely limited because he was recovering from an assassination attempt that nearly took his life 10 years before. Add it up. Looking at the news conference itself, Democrats were genuinely relieved. The president did not appear stumbling or to be challenged cognitively. On the other hand, some of his answers prompted Republicans to call the news conference a disaster. And I refer specifically to his reply about Ukraine, where he wanted to draw a red line, and it frankly came out pink. That's when he said that the U.S. would not tolerate a major incursion by Russia into Ukraine, prompting a lot of people to say, well, what isn't a major incursion? Ukraine's President Zelensky, clearly nervous at this point, may have said it best. Any incursion is unwanted. And 2 days later, of course, Secretary of State Tony Blinken finally stated the U.S. position that any kind of incursion into Russia would result in terrible retribution for the Kremlin. He said this to Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov. There we stand.
Well, John, Friday was a day of cleanup for everybody from the president to Jen Psaki to Vice President Harris and more. Any other fallout to be anticipated from this?
I think that the president has contained it with Ukraine. But remember, now all eyes are on Russia and the Ukrainian capital of Kiev. If there is any kind of attack and if Russian troops move closer to the country they consider part of their own, a lot of it will be blamed on President Biden and his remarks. So this may be the press conference that keeps on giving to Biden's enemies.
The president's poll numbers continue to drop, and so do Democrats who are considering running for re-election in 2022. More vacancies coming up?
More vacancies. There were two this week, bringing the number to 28 House Democrats who are either retiring from office or seeking another position. The latest two Democrats to retire have been here a long time. Jim Langevin from Rhode Island, who came to Congress more than 20 years ago, and Jerry McInerney of California, who came here 16 years ago, are about now saying it's time to go home. Now, that 28 figure is important. It's more than twice as many Republicans, 13, who are saying out of here to the U.S. House. But more importantly, it's only 12 shy of the modern high of exiters from the House of Representatives who happen to be Democrats. That figure is 40, and that was in 1992, when they were assisted in part by the House banking scandal, in which many members were shown to be overdrawn for periods of years with an overdraft that normal people would not be given. In any event, there's no major scandal, but there are low poll numbers, and a Gallup poll showed that more Americans favor the Republicans than the Democrats in the midterm elections by 5 points. That's a dramatic shift from a year ago when Democrats had a 9-point lead in the Gallup poll. So there you have it.
It seems as though the administration continues to double down, even triple down, on the direction and the path they're on. Is that simply to attempt to shore up their base? I mean, I can't understand why they don't see what's happening with independents.
Well, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer was going ahead this week with an effort to break the filibuster against the Freedom to Vote Act, already passed in the House as the John Lewis Voting Act. Overall, Schumer can count votes. He knows very well that with the opposition of Democratic Senator Sinema of Arizona and Manchin of West Virginia, the enhanced federal control over elections won't see the light of day. And yet he persists with it, as he will persist with a slimmed-down Build Back Better bill. And this is in large part to dramatize the voting records of Republicans who will be painted as obstructionists. In addition, there's fallout for it in the long term, Rick. Both Senator Sinema and Manchin are up for election in 24 and are very likely to have spirited Democratic opposition, opposition within their own parties. Bernie Sanders, Senator from Vermont, has already signaled he will back potential primary opponents. And the president of the AFL-CIO did not fault anyone for challenging these two incumbents.
The annual March for Life held in Washington on Friday. You covered it, and what can you tell us?
Well, at this point, the 49th annual March for Life was younger than most of those held before, smaller because of the COVID restrictions and the cold weather, at one point being in single degrees Fahrenheit. And finally, most interestingly and most dramatically, this was clearly the most enthusiastic March for Life I've ever covered. People there are clearly expecting the Supreme Court to respond to the Dobbs case that was argued in December and overturn Roe v. Wade, the 49-year-old Supreme Court ruling that essentially established a constitutional right for abortion. Now, if Roe is overturned, there probably won't be any more marches for life on the nation's capital, but they'll be at state capitals where people hope to reinstall, in some cases, tough opposition legislation to abortion. The state of Michigan, for example, already has a constitutional provision limiting abortion. It's been unable to take effect for decades because of Roe. Similarly, the state of Ohio passed a heartbeat bill, which bans any abortions once a heartbeat is detected in the womb. Again, Roe has kept this from being enforced and being law. Some cooler heads among the group, if you'll pardon the pun, are not so certain there'll be repeal, but there will be further limitations on abortions, which will give the upper hand to the states. This was an historic March for Life, given what the Supreme Court may or may not do. And as I said, it could be the last March for Life.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Thank you.
Thank you. Stay warm.
We'll try. It is 7:17. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We will talk with Cheryl Atkinson next, and then we'll be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. We'll get the latest on the delivery of assistance. Equipment has been delivered to Ukraine. It arrived last night, according to a tweet from the U.S. Embassy. We'll get the very latest from Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Also be talking with K.T. McFarland about the Biden administration's diplomatic efforts with Russia on the Ukraine crisis. That's all coming up, but first, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Good morning. First in D.C., I have no reports of any construction or crashes on 295, 395, and 695. You should find all lanes at speed. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, inner loop and outer loop are at the posted speed limit. Traveling between the two beltways on the BW Parkway and 95, no delays, northbound or southbound. In Montgomery County on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, you're at speed both northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Plenty of sunshine and very cold temperatures on this Saturday. We only reached the upper 20s yesterday. Today, after starting the single digits in teens across the region, I think we'll at least reach the 30-degree mark. Should get closer to freezing this afternoon. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the teens in the suburbs, low 20s around town. For your Sunday, we are expecting some added clouds by the afternoon. A weak disturbance rolls through late in the day. High temperatures in the upper 30s, but we could have some snow showers to end the day, particularly into the evening hours. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
15 degrees in Washington, 719. It's the Saturday morning update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
The Saturday morning update continues. It's great to have you with us this morning. I'm Rick Fowler, and it's always a pleasure to be joined by Cheryl Atkison. She is the host of Full Measure. You see that every Sunday morning, 10 o'clock on ABC7. And, of course, she's got the blog at CherylAtkison.com. And, Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
You have a very interesting interview coming up tomorrow with Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller. And, of course, he was the one voice demanding accountability for the Afghanistan debacle and the exit from Afghanistan. And I'm very interested to hear what he has to say.
Well, people might remember he made these videos. He broke military rules. Very high-ranking guy to do this, a battalion commander, going on social media and saying someone needs to be held accountable for this terrible decision-making that resulted in many deaths. Remember, dozens of Afghans died in the U.S. exit, as well as 13 U.S. service members and the U.S. drone that mistakenly targeted a bunch of civilians in a car, including a bunch of kids that were killed. To this day, the only one that I can see publicly held accountable for anything is Sergeant Scheller for having spoken out. He was court-martialed. So in our interview, we talk with him about what's happened since his court-martial, and also why he says his mission to hold people accountable, why that's not over yet.
So he was court-martialed, but what happened to his career? I mean, is he done, out, the pension?
Yeah, he's out. I mean, he knew when he was stepping forward, he was probably ending his 17-year Marine career. I don't think he thought he'd have to give up his retirement, and of course his marriage has fallen apart and all these other things, so his life has totally changed. He said he kind of knew one way or another that was some version of that was going to happen, but it was worse because they really went after him, and he agrees he broke the rules. He agrees he should be held accountable for the things he did, but he just said he thought it was more important than his career, that speaking out and somebody saying what others were thinking was more important than maintaining his own retirement and so on. But, it'll be interesting. I think people will really be fascinated to hear him tell his own story, what it was like to be in the center of that and what he's doing now.
I want to turn to a couple of articles you've got on your blog, and one of them is the continuing saga of the media mistakes during the Biden administration. And I believe you have just updated that.
Yeah, I chronicled the media mistakes in the era of Trump. I'm doing something similar with Biden. Not so many media mistakes against Biden as there were against Trump. Big difference. But there are media mistakes. A lot of them really still cut or fall against conservatives, even with a president, that's a Democrat now. So I look at that one where people probably heard in the past week or so, Nina Totenberg of NPR talked about supposedly that Neil Gorsuch, the Supreme Court justice, wouldn't wear a mask when they were told to, and therefore Justice Sotomayor, who has health problems, couldn't sit next to him, but having to do teleconferences. That just took off. Well, my gripe with that is, once again, she's relying on anonymous people. Well, she knows who they are, but they can't be quoted, so we should always be so circumspect when that happens. And then there was no other side. There were no comments in her story from, let's say, the Supreme Court Justice John Roberts, who was supposedly defied after he supposedly had ordered masks to be worn. A lot of problems with this story. Well, it picked up and everybody ran with it without attributing it, just took it as true. I mean, it's one thing to report an allegation. That's fair game. But there should be two sides and it should be attributed. Well, lo and behold, out comes both Sotomayor and Gorsuch and a third party, the Chief Justice, all weighing in and saying the story was completely false. None of that ever happened. So NPR standing by their story. I see it as very problematic simply because of the way they reported it. And that's my latest media mistake.
Also, you have been tracking COVID-19 vaccines, and you've been coming up with stories and angles that are not typically reported in the United States media.
Well, that's my goal, is to try to bring underreported information to light. And I continually update my COVID-19 vaccine concerns, not to scare people, but certainly all information on a developing vaccine that we knew very little about initially should be available for public consumption and for medical consumption. But this stuff that would normally a couple of years ago made international headlines, when a new warning is added to a vaccine, for example, about a serious disorder, that affects potentially hundreds of millions of people who would want to know about that. And there's virtual silence in the main media here in the U.S. So I'm updating that. I mean, I'm looking now at my own updates. There are just dozens and dozens of warnings and updates and concerns here in the U.S. and around the world about the various vaccines. Most recently, new warnings added about serious neurological and blood conditions, which just build on previous ones that existed. Also, there was a study confirming menstrual cycle changes in women after vaccination. Remember, they said that was a conspiracy theory at first. And now the way it's reported, when they confirm that there are these changes, well, the media writes, but there's nothing to worry about. And the good news is they're short term. And you know, instead of just factually reporting it, they're trying to just make everybody not worry without themselves having full information on what they're reporting. Plus, this past week, the FDA, I don't know if people knew this, added a warning about something called immune thrombocytopenia to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and there were new warnings about blood disorders and paralysis added to AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in the European Union. So, you know, I'm just trying to keep track of this so people, as they make their calculation with their doctors on what they ought to do, they have full information.
CherylAtkison.com, the website, and, of course, Full Measure tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. As always, Cheryl, thank you very much, and have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
We're at 7:25. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Reminder, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is on the way, and K.T. McFarland got the very latest on those diplomatic efforts with Russia over Ukraine. 90-minute meeting between Secretary of State Blinken and Sergei Lavrov, and we'll have the very latest for you. Stay with us. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler, and interesting press conference the president has had this past week. And you see he's getting a little short with the media, is getting a little testy sometimes with questions. And I want to give you an example. One of the things from the press conference and just his sort of brushing off the poll numbers, I thought that one was kind of interesting, the way he handled that one with the media. And this was earlier this week in the president's press conference.
How do you plan to win back moderates and independents who cast a ballot for you in 2020, but polls indicate aren't happy with the way you're doing your job now?
I don't believe the polls.
That's an abrupt answer, of course. You know, if your poll numbers are bad, that is what you're going to say. And another one of the jabs, he always gets back and forth with Peter Ducey, who is the White House reporter for Fox News, along with Jackie Heinrich. And this was a little back and forth with Biden and Ducey at the press conference.
You always ask me the nicest questions. I know you do.
All right.
None of them make a lot of sense to me, but I...
Well, let's try.
Fire away. Come on.
A new year.
Ha, ha, ha. None of them make a lot of sense. So you might have seen this. There was a little back and forth with Jackie Heinrich, who asked the president why he was waiting for Vladimir Putin to make the first move. And the president, whether he knew he was on mic or off mic, he said, "What a stupid question." Just an example of the respect that he shows for his media White House reporters. I want to take you back to 2020 because this is on January 20th. Remember Inauguration Day of 2020 when the president was going to unite us all? And here's what he had to say about respect.
If you're ever working with me and I hear you treat another colleague with disrespect, talk down to someone, I promise you I will fire you on the spot. No ifs, ands, or buts. Everybody. Is entitled to be treated with decency and dignity.
Unless you disagree with him. It is 7:30. Heather Curtis has the news. Then we're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. A day at school turns terrifying for kids at Magruder High School in Rockville yesterday when police say a 17-year-old male student shot another male student. They found the victim in a school bathroom around 1 p.m. A few minutes later, the school went into full lockdown. Montgomery County Police Chief Marcus Jones.
Officers began a search of the building and later located a suspect who was taken into custody shortly after 3 p.m. A handgun was also located with the student suspect.
The victim is in the hospital in serious condition. A 22-year-old New York City police officer is shot to death while answering a call about an argument between a woman and her adult son in Harlem last night. Another officer severely injured. Four officers have now been shot in the city in as many days. Mayor Eric Adams calling for an end to the violence.
This was just not an attack on three brave officers. This was an attack on the city of New York.
If you have kids at Prince William County Public Schools, they may not have to quarantine as long if they've been around someone with COVID. Superintendent Dr. LaTanya McDade says starting on Monday, close contacts who are not vaccinated and don't feel sick will have to quarantine for 5 days instead of 10. That's in line with updated CDC guidance. Students who are fully vaccinated and not sick or who have had COVID in the last 90 days will not need to quarantine at all. Students who test positive for COVID will still need to quarantine for 10 days, vaccinated or not. WMAL Sports, the Wizards fell to the Raptors, 109-105. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Good morning. In Arlington, Virginia, North Courthouse Road, that's closed for a water main break between 14th Street and 13th Street. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, I just checked out the traffic cameras. Both loops are at speed. There isn't any construction or crashes. On 66 in Fairfax County, eastbound, there is a crash. Three lanes are blocked approaching Nutley Street. Traffic is slow from 123. And finally, on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, Central Cruise Control, all lanes are clear, northbound and southbound. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, sunny, a high in the lower 30s. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the lower 20s. Right now, 17 chilly degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
7:35, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Glad that you have joined us. Very cold January morning. We are joined now by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, the author of Operation Dark Heart, and also the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast at the londoncenter.org website. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Well, let's talk about the very latest on the Russia-U.S. diplomatic efforts over Ukraine. A story overnight that the first U.S. shipment of recently directed security assistance has arrived in Ukraine. Tell us a little bit about the equipment and what kind of a difference will it make?
So it's very heavy in what we call Javelin anti-tank missiles. It's a type of fairly long-range rockets that can be used to take out armor and armored personnel carriers, things like that. Obviously, the idea is, and the perception is, based on the order of battle demonstrated by the Russians, they're going to go in with some pretty big forces that are led by their tanks. So to be able to counter that, obviously you want to be able to have essentially launchers and rockets that can counter that. These are significant. There's over 200 of these missiles, 37 launchers apparently. Of course, they're trying to make sure that these things aren't used in any other way except defensively, so they've put restrictions on it, plus small arms ammunition, and a variety of other issues that items which are not lethal, but for the most part, you're talking about conventional military arms that would be used to counter a large military force coming across the border. So that's what they've got, and that's what they're deploying.
Now, an interesting statement. The U.S. military goal would be to, quote, meet the capability that NATO allies in the region are asking for, according to an official. U.S. forces could operate as they already do unilaterally in Europe. But tell us a little bit about the NATO situation, because Ukraine is not a NATO nation.
NATO is not. I mean, Ukraine is not a NATO nation. The closest nation that is NATO is Poland, and they are a border nation. The problem with NATO, and this is something that they're not talking much about, is the fact that Germany doesn't want to play. As a matter of fact, the British are sending in lethal aid, and the British had to fly around Germany through Denmark because the Germans, even though they're a NATO ally, are not allowing it. And this is something we've spoken about several times. The Russians have been able to penetrate effectively and provide countries like Germany a great deal of energy during the winter. And the last thing the Germans are going to do, and they've been very clear about this, is do something to essentially poke the bear, to do something to upset Putin and Russia. So at this point, NATO is a bit of a mess by the fact you don't have all of its NATO, member nations working in a unified manner. You have the Baltic states, which are very concerned. You have obviously Poland, which is on high alert, looking for support from other nations. So that's where we're at on NATO. NATO is not as unified as we'd like it to be. And to be effective, you're going to have Germany really do something, pick a side before they could do something as a real unified effort.
Well, they want to keep the gas on in Germany, right?
Of course. Yep. Oh, yeah.
So Secretary of State Blinken said, "We've been clear, if any Russian military forces move across Ukraine's border, that's a renewed invasion. It will be met with swift, severe, and a united response from the United States and our partners and allies." Strong language. Glad to hear that they're using that kind of language. But the question I would have is, who are our partners and allies here? If, as you say, Germany's out, Poland obviously has an interest here. You mentioned the UK. But what kind of support do we expect from people like France or Spain or other European countries?
Well, that's the question. At this point, the required element for that to work is leadership. And everything I've read, to include Blinken's comments, really don't add up to confidence in the U.S. leadership. And let's be blunt, President Biden's comments regarding they wouldn't be, you know, if they just take a piece of Ukraine, it's not really an invasion. When you have a president making those kind of proclamations, and as Joe Biden said, president's words mean something, he clearly messed up. And because of that, people at this point, other nations at this point, don't have the confidence that you would really want to have to line up behind the United States to do something in reply. So that's where we're at right now.
So Sergei Lavrov is the Russian foreign minister. He said yesterday that Russia is not planning to attack. Why would they amass hundreds of thousands of troops on the border just for the exercise?
Well, you kind of made that point. The fact that they're doing the exercises causes a great deal of consternation, fear, and focus. And Putin loves a good show. You know, this is all for show. The question becomes, is the show going to actually produce something that relates to them going in, or will their bluff be sufficient to actually get parts of the nation to go over to? And remember, Blinken's job there, and Biden's actually kind of said this, is to find a path to, quote-unquote, peacefully avoid conflict. Rick, half the time when you talk about doing that, you're giving up something. You're talking about negotiating something away. So it's conceivable that Putin gets his way through negotiations, through his bullying tactics. Bullying does work, but Putin's a bully. So if he gets what he feels he wants in the short term, he may not invade. At the same time, he's been successful using his forces as a tool to bully others. So again, Putin is running the table here. Blinken is just not a smart man. And the more he goes out there and basically kowtows to Putin, the more Putin wins. And so at this rate, he may not have to invade to get what he wants.
Well, there's an article in the Daily Mail kind of lays out some of the details of the 90-minute meeting that Secretary mm-hmm. of State Blinken had with the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov. They met in Geneva for about an hour and a half or so. And Blinken didn't rule out another meeting between President Biden and Putin in those conversations he had with Lavrov. Lavrov accusing NATO of, quote, working against Russia and stirring up hysteria about invasion of Ukraine. It just sounds to me like the Russians are trying to play us and play the world at this point. I don't know. I mean, wouldn't you think people might get a little upset if you had 100,000 plus troops on your border ready to roll in?
Well, both can be true. I mean, you know, is NATO trying to stir things up? Well, yeah, of course. I mean, this is one of the things that the Russians have said long term that they're upset about, is that NATO continues to expand eastward. Obviously, we've spoken about NATO expanding out, adding both Finland and Norway, who have applied to NATO, to the ranks. And, of course, NATO, the Russians would see that as aggression. With that said, it's fundamentally and factually correct that the Russians are out doing exercises on the border of Ukraine, and they've been engaged in operations in the Donbass region. So that's true, too. But for the most part, again, it's the messaging. Russians are being very effective in trying to tell their part of the story, and Blinken is not. And so it's a very passive, very kind of, you know, we're going to say things and do things, and the Russians are going to be frightened by it. Russians are not frightened by it. And all this talk of economic sanctions, Rick, they've planned around those. They've already established an alternate economy to benefit themselves with or without an invasion. So it's the more you hear Blinken talk, the more we hear all of these threats, the more the Russians are convinced that nothing's going to be done. And I think it simply continues to encourage them to do something.
And there was a statement out of the Biden administration that the Biden administration has provided more aid to Ukraine than any other administration in history. Do you think that's accurate?
No, I don't. this is, again, it's one of those things you can say whatever you want, but the reality is different. Rick, this is no secret. The Russians are watching everything that goes on in Ukraine. They have an amazing network of intelligence. They know that's false. So as much as the Biden administration can say that, and that is only for public consumption here, it's not true. And so, again, we have an administration which is way out of its lane regarding its ability to understand what's going on and manage it. And the more you see desperate articles like that, that really, it fools nobody. Nobody who reads that is going to take that seriously. And it just continues, again, to encourage Russia and their bad behavior, because everybody knows it's not true. And it's the biggest national security threat we have today is Joe Biden and his administration, because of their miscalculations, their propaganda, and things like this, which it doesn't help, and it only creates a perception that they're out of touch, which, you know, they kind of are.
Well, we're in a little bit of a box here, because if Russia does make a move of some sort, or it's perceived that Russia gets the upper hand in negotiations, or as you mentioned, if there's something given up by the United States or Ukraine, what does that mean in terms of China? And that's the last question I'm going to ask you this morning. What does that mean moving forward?
So that I don't believe the Russians and Chinese are coordinating, but they certainly are watching each other. And in this case, I think the Chinese are going to watch, take notes, and be prepared to begin a renewed aggression, a series of aggressions after the Olympics. They're going to play it kind of cool, the Chinese, that is, until the Olympics are kind of done. They want to have that prestige. They want to have that attention. And so I think they're going to watch very carefully what we do regarding actual military response. They may be even encouraging Putin to do something, just kind of saying, hey, go, you know, we want to see what happens. And I think that's going to be driving the Chinese tactics come, you know, February, March. But I do believe it's going to be something the Chinese will fall in on. And worst case, Rick. You may see all of these things happening at once, all the bad guys acting out at once, because, you know, they may well have the idea of swamping the Biden administration, getting it to the point of where it has a hard time reacting. It already has a hard time reacting, but I mean, if you really get everything going at once, I think they're going to overwhelm the president and overwhelm the ability of the White House to have any cohesive response.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and he is the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. And Tony, what you got going this week?
So we're actually having a special on human trafficking and child sex trafficking to examine what we can do, what we should do, what we need to be aware of to identify and stop human trafficking and child sex trafficking as best we can, just from being out there. And one of the things people learn from this presentation, there's a lot more of it going on around than people fully understand and to be aware of it.
Very serious problem that does not get the attention that is needed. Tony, thank you very much. You can find out more at londoncenter.org. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
7:48, this is the Saturday Morning Update. We'll talk to KT McFarland next, but first, LBD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, all three, all the lanes are clear, no construction, and no crashes. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, you're not hitting your brakes. Lanes are open and at speed on the inner loop and on the outer loop. If you're traveling between the two beltways on the BW Parkway or 95, northbound and southbound lanes are clear. And on 270 in Montgomery County, you shouldn't find any delays between the beltway and Frederick, northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Plenty of sunshine and very cold temperatures on this Saturday. We only reached the upper 20s yesterday. Today, after starting the single digits and teens across the region, I think we'll at least reach the 30-degree mark. Should get close to freezing this afternoon. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the teens in the suburbs, low 20s around town. For your Sunday, we are expecting some added clouds by the afternoon. A weak disturbance rolls through late in the day. High temperatures in the upper 30s, but we could have some snow showers to end the day, particularly into the evening hours. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
15 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:50 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Mark Levin lights up the lines weeknights at 6 on Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Thank you for joining us on the Saturday Morning Update, and we are joined by KT McFarland. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. She is President Trump's first Deputy National Security Advisor. KT, good morning. Wonderful to have you with us.
A pleasure and an honor.
And it was wonderful to see you on Gutfeld the other night. That was great.
Well, I'm delighted you stay up that late. Good for you.
I heard you were going to be on. I said, I got to check this out. So, no, it's a show that's just really been crushing it in the ratings. So, good to see you on there. Well, I want to turn to a piece that you have at foxnews.com, an opinion piece just out. And I think it's a very interesting take on all of this. We're all concerned that war between Ukraine, Russia, the U.S. may be in the middle of all this. We're all worried about a war that's coming. Your headline, Russia's hybrid war against Ukraine has already begun. Putin doesn't need a hot war to achieve his objectives of isolating and destabilizing Ukraine. Very interesting perspective. Tell us how you see this.
Well, you know, if you look at what Putin's done in the last 20 years, so in Georgia, the country of Georgia in 2008, they used false flag operations. They didn't invade all of Georgia. They just took out the two eastern provinces. Flash forward to the Obama administration when Putin took Crimea. Very quick blitzkrieg action, started with false flag operations, took it, done with it before anybody had a chance to respond. And I think he's doing the same thing. Hybrid war goes just under the threshold. So it's ambiguous. It's not clear who's launched cyber attacks. It's not certain why certain pipelines seem to turn off suddenly. He sends these little green men, they're called, and they're not Martians. They're Russian forces that he sends over the border into Ukraine, into Georgia, into Crimea. And they go in and they pretend that they're ethnic Russians of that country, and then they start little skirmishes or they set up crazy situations. And then what Putin says is, hey, wait, I need to protect those ethnic Russians on the border of Russia. So they might be in Ukraine, but they're ethnic Russians. They might be in Crimea, but they're ethnic Russians. And then he has an excuse to go in, not to invade the entire country, but to just take those little parts of the country. And I think that's what he's doing now. You know, why should he risk a hot war? He's got the troops on the border. He's got the missiles there. He's made the point that he could have a hot war and he'd win a hot war. He's forced the hands of the Germans, who have said, we don't want to have a hot war with, we're not going to get involved militarily. A military option's off the table for Germany. We're not even going to send lethal weapons to Ukraine. In fact, if any other country takes German lethal weapons and tries to send them to Ukraine, we're going to block that. Joe Biden has said more or less the same thing. So they've all said, we got to react if there's a hot war. But they've all made it very clear and given Putin a green light. Hey, look, if it's just a hybrid war, well, maybe you can get away with it. So I think that's what Putin does.
Very interesting subhead in your opinion piece. How did things get this bad this fast?
Well, I think it's all about energy. A year ago, Putin would never have done this. A year ago, we had abundant, reliable, inexpensive supplies of oil and natural gas. We were self-sufficient. We were a net energy exporter. The Keystone pipeline was about to go operational. It was going to boost our already booming energy industry. And in addition to that, we were objecting to the Russian gas pipeline that was going to go from Russia to Germany. Well, fast forward a year, and it's all changed. President Biden undid everything that President Trump had done, just sort of a reflexive reaction. So even though a year ago oil was $40 a barrel, today it's $80 a barrel. We Americans are now paying twice, three times as much for a gallon of gas as we did a year ago. We've got inflation, which is caused by this energy, and we have stifling economic growth. But on the other hand, all these high energy prices as a result of America getting out of the energy market, they've made Russia rich again. You know, Russia gets windfall profits when oil is above $80 a barrel. Where was it yesterday? $87 a barrel. Mm. And then President Biden gave the go-ahead for Russia's Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Currently, without that pipeline, currently Europe depends on its energy, Russia, for about 35% of its energy. Once that Nord Stream 2 pipeline is completed, it's going to be 50, 60, 70% in some countries. So Russia will have control over the energy supplies to Europe. That gives Russia even more leverage. So Russia, looking at this world and saying America's in free fall, political confusion, an American president who's considered to be weak and incompetent and extremely unpopular, that's why Putin's making his move now.
So that's Russia. What about the foreign policy in general from the administration? Your assessment, having been a deputy national security advisor in your career with the years in the Pentagon and the Reagan administration, assess the foreign policy efforts of the Biden administration so far.
Well, they're pretty uniformly bad. But, I keep thinking, why are they making these stupid mistakes all the time? Why are they giving this to China? To Russia? Why are they sort of acquiescing in China? All they seem to do is they issue strong statements, and they expect the world to somehow salute and say, you know, where do you want us to be? And they're living in a different world. You know, they haven't adjusted to the modern life. When you think of Joe Biden, he kind of came to political age in that post-World War II period where America ruled the world. Countries fell all over themselves to accommodate to our wishes. We were the strongest economy, major trade partner, major security partner. Our military was the strongest. We ran all the diplomatic international institutions. And so that's where his head still is. I think his advisors are like a generation younger, and they all came of age after the Cold War victory, where once again we were on top. We were the world's sole superpower. Russia had been, Soviet Union had been defeated. China had yet to come of age. And I think that's where they're all in. They're in that mindset where they think if they say something, issue a strong statement, the countries of the world are going to fall into place. And then what happens is they issue these strong statements, you know, Putin, you better do this or else, or China or else, and their bluff gets called. And then we look even weaker on the world stage. I just don't understand why they haven't adjusted to the new realities of the world and try to figure out what is our leverage. How can we use the position that we have? How can we get a better position in the world? Because countries don't follow leaders because, You know, they have countries have self-interest, put it very bluntly. Countries have self-interest. And if their self-interest are not served by doing America's bidding, maybe they're served by doing China's bidding. And that's why I think if the Biden administration were really serious about getting leverage back over Russia, over China, over the environment, over anything, we would go back to energy independence where we were a year ago. It would be really simple to do. Just flip the switch back on to the Keystone Pipeline. Just take the shackles off of the oil and gas industries. We could once again be energy self-sufficient. We would be an exporter of energy. And we would have a booming American economy and inflation would go down. But they just can't seem to get there. And it's such a pity because we are the only country in the world that can supply the rest of the world with cheap, abundant, reliable energy.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And you can see her Fox opinion piece at foxnews.com. The headline on it, Russia's hybrid war against Ukraine has already begun. K.T., as always, an honor to have you with us, and thank you so much.
Honor and a pleasure. Thank you, Rick.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Heather Curtis has the 8 o'clock news next, and then it's Garden Sense. Stay with us right here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media station.